Hello and welcome to episode 102 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Hahn.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
So this week we've got two very different horror movies to talk about, one called Nina Forever, and then the much talked about The Witch. So we're going to get things started with Nina Forever, and Christy, you are on that one.
Sure. This is the plot synopsis for Nina Forever. After his girlfriend Nina dies in a car crash, Rob unsuccessfully attempts suicide. As he begins to overcome his grief, he falls in love with a coworker, Holly. Their relationship is complicated when Nina, unable to find rest in the afterlife, comes back to life to sarcastically torment them whenever they have sex. It's lengthy but accurate. So this actually played at South by Southwest last year, and Perry came back raving about it. And I was very polite and didn't say what I was thinking because I had been sent like a poster image of it, which was like Holly on a bed naked with like bloody hands covering her boobs. And I was like, no, thank you. This looks terrible. I don't want to see this. But based on Perry's strong recommendation, when I had the chance to see it, I went to see it. And I was actually completely blown away because the premise of dead ex-girlfriend appearing in bed when you're fucking your new girlfriend is horrific, but the movie knows that. But instead of it being some kind of gross B movie where it's like, yeah, this is just about boobs and blood and blah, like, it's actually got this really amazing raw emotional core and this really dark but wonderful gallows humor that made it a movie that I became really fixated on. I actually watched it 3 times in a week.
Yeah, jeez. You've been championing it so hard, which is the reason that I watched it. I actually didn't even, like, Perry hasn't mentioned this movie to me, so I didn't hear about it from her. I heard about it from you, Christy, and I've heard you telling everyone about it. Every party that we've been to since you saw this movie, you've been talking about it. You've been promoting it probably even harder than, like, their actual PR people have been promoting it. I finally got around to seeing it this week, and I want to say it's not what I expected, except that it is what I expected because you had already kind of set me up for it's not the kind of movie that you think it's going to be. And I was very happy to find that it takes a premise that seems like kind of gross and weird. And not only that, but that doesn't seem like it would work because I was like, how often can like a couple have sex and then a dead girl shows up? And like that just, even if it's shocking and exciting the first time, it kind of just seems like it would lose its power. But it's smart enough that it's not just about, like, here's a completely normal couple and this girl keeps showing up. It really taps into, the grieving process and how people see themselves and what people want and what happens when people get what they want. I don't want to give away too much, but it's really insightful and really clever and really fun. And the acting in it is really good, like, especially the girl that played Nina. I thought did such a good job of being kind of creepy and kind of sad and kind of gross and kind of scary. Like, she had a lot to do. There were a lot of ways that performance, the dead girl, could have gone wrong, but I thought she handled it very well.
Yeah, the physicality of that role is so incredibly important. It's because, like, most of the time when you think of something like this and what she needs to do with her body, you might get some sort of, like, you know, a digitally enhanced performance, but there's something so natural about the way she contorts her body, and it's like, it's freaky, but not to the point of being, like, upsetting or hard to look at. Like, it looks wrong, but it's okay.
It's weirdly beautiful. Like, and it's disturbing, and I think that's the point, is I wrote in my review how it's strange because you look at Nina and she is terrifying looking because, like, I mean, it's as if her body just came from the car wreck that killed her. There's open wounds. Her leg is kind of sort of ripped in half, and it's horrific, but at the same time, the way they've designed her, she's also beautiful, and it's they're playing with a taboo, obviously. Like, how do you objectify a dead girl? But it's not just a kink thing because Nina is a full-bodied character who has, like, a real spark to her, and the way she talks to Rob and to Holly is really amazing. And then by contrast, like, I was a little worried because I was so into Nina's performance, so into Fiona O'Shaughnessy's performance, that in its physicality and its humor, like, one of my favorite lines is, I might be dead, but I kept my standards, because she's talking smack as Holly just works at a grocery store. Like, I laughed so damn hard. But, like, it's not, like, I was afraid that when she wasn't on screen, I was going to be bored because she's such a glorious gimmick and so instantly iconic and so much fun. But the other actors, whose names I'm not going to get right, Abigail Hardinghanum I can do, but then the other one's like an Irish name and I'm going to screw it up. It's, I'm going to say Sean Barry, spelled C-I-A-N.
Yeah, that's probably a smart way to pronounce it, because like Irish names are always spelled like in a ridiculous manner, and then it happens to be like a really normal name, like Owen. It really annoys me how they spell Owen. Okay, off track.
Yeah, like I went
back
to Ireland
once
and felt like an idiot because I felt like I don't know how to
read. Now we're just dissing the Irish for no reason on our podcast. Why don't you just refer to him by his last name, which seems
Barry.
Easier to get right. Yes.
Barry's a good guy. No, their performances, though, they managed to build a relationship that I really cared about and that I was rooting for. And there's like one scene where when Nina shows up, she obviously wrecks their sheets because she is covered in blood. So there's like one scene where they decide they're going to try to tough it out. And you see them carrying this basket of blood-covered sheets to the laundromat. And it's such a weirdly hilarious moment that, like, I kept being surprised by this movie and by the different tones it takes on and succeeds with. It was directed by two brothers, Ben and Chris Blaine. And I've never seen a movie like this before, which is why I'm so personally excited about it, because I feel like we can tell you what it's about, but there's a real joy into walking into this British comedy and being like, oh, like it kind of, it's just so unexpected in how it gives you this really horrific concept and then is very playful within that.
It is really hard to like clearly convey what this kind of movie is, like, especially between the balance of horror and comedy here. And it like goes to show with that image that you were kind of criticizing before, because like back when I saw it at South by Southwest, it wasn't part of the horror lineup, so I didn't flag it until someone who covered it told me, like, you'd really like this. It's a great horror comedy. So then I finally saw it. But, like, that image, the bloody image of her, like, naked in bed and, like, just absolutely covered in blood, is insanely striking and will catch certain people's attention. But then if you look at the poster they're using to promote the movie now, it looks like the cheesiest, like, rom-com ever. And I don't think either of them accurately sells the movie for what it is. It's like, it's just like the perfect blend between the two. And it's got some serious style to it, too. Like that scene you just referred to where they're cleaning up after Nina's mess and cleaning the... There's also another scene that we ran an exclusive clip from on Collider where she's cleaning the apartment of, like, any remnants of Nina. And just, like, the way it's shot, the way it, the pacing of the editing and the music choice that they do, you don't really see anything like that. I mean, this very much feels like a movie that the Blaine brothers made and nobody else could have done the same way.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing and it's interesting, and like that's what I'm not gonna say it's like a perfect movie. I think there's points where it gets a little sluggish. Like there's a whole subplot with Nina's parents that I think kind of drags. But you know, I basically don't want to overhype this movie. What I kept telling people is you need to see this movie because it is so unlike anything I'd seen. And you know, I think for us it's a rare privilege to get to see something that doesn't remind you of a million other movies.
If your goal is to not hype it up too much, you're doing a terrible job. You have been talking this up to anyone who mentions that they've ever seen a movie in their life. But all that said, it is like...
You've seen movies. Let me tell you about Nina Forever.
Exactly. But it is, as you said, very unusual and very surprising. And it doesn't follow, even though it's like, you know, you could say it's a horror movie, you could say it's a romantic comedy, whatever. It doesn't follow any like familiar plot line, so you keep being like, I genuinely don't really know where this is going. And one thing I liked is that there, like, while I was watching it, there were a few, you know, you're kind of like keeping a running tally in your mind of like, how do I feel about this movie, like, what do I think of it, what do I like, what do I not like. And some of the things that didn't quite make sense to me in the beginning kind of make more and more sense as you go on and get to know the characters better and get to know, like, what's really happening between all these people. I actually like the Rob subplot a lot because I feel like it kind of I mean, a lot of the movie is kind of about grief and the way that people look at people who are grieving. So then I thought that was an interesting, like an interesting counterpoint to the way that that Holly and Rob are dealing with Nina's death.
No, I'd agree with that. Every character has kind of like an extra layer to it. It's not just about, you know, the relationship itself. It's about the fact that they're all human beings and they're all affected by what happened to Nina and how it's going to progress from here. It's not just a gimmick.
Yeah, I think it's a surprisingly very touching movie that is also creepy and filled with this wonderful foreboding and filled with a really great sense of humor. So I think across the board, we're all recommending it. And I think we should probably wrap up. But I want to point out that Nina Forever is in theaters now, and it's also available to rent and buy on iTunes, Amazon Video, and Vimeo.
Yeah, so go do that. One of those. We're going to switch gears now and talk about The Witch. And I've got that one. Here is the IMDb synopsis. A family in 1630s New England is torn apart by the forces of witchcraft, black magic, and possession. Yay for IMDb synopsis. Like, that's a 110% accurate one. And I love this movie.
Two this week.
Seriously. You might have heard a little bit about The Witch because it played extremely well at Sundance in 2015, and the director, Robert Eggers, won the directing award there. This is his first feature, and not only is it incredible that he won the award, but the film is an incredible first feature. It just, it goes to show how, like, firm of a handle he had on every element of this, and just, like, how he creates the atmosphere, how he directs his actors, and he just pulls it all together really well. And this movie, I mean, a lot of people are running around being like, this is the best horror movie since whatever, or this is the scariest thing I've ever seen since, and...
Yeah, don't believe the hype. When people say it's, like, the best horror movie since The Babadook, they don't mean it's as scary as The Babadook. Let's just make that clear.
I think some people mean that, but go
on,
Harry.
You know, I think it was scarier than The Babadook. I mean, this type of material kind of, like, gets under my skin a little more, because this isn't just, not that The Babadook is this, but I'm just saying this isn't just, you know, a jump scare, you know, slasher-type movie with blood and creepy things like that. This is about, like, a super sinister force, like, digging its claws into a family and, like, slowly tearing them apart, and to me, something like that feels more malicious than... you know, the most brutal slasher, like, hack-slashing someone apart.
I mean, I think that one of the things that's tough about horror and comedy, both making it and critiquing it, is that it's very subjective. Like, I personally thought The Babadook was scarier, but I can completely see how, depending on what terrifies you personally, this movie could be a lot scarier to you, and this movie could feel relevant, or this movie could hit harder. I do admire it for relying more on tension and dread and atmosphere than on jump scares. Like, but I have to say, we were just talking about overhyping Nina Forever and the dangers of that. This is a movie that, to be perfectly honest, and I know this is not fair because it's not the movie's fault, but I feel like I would have liked it if I didn't go into the theater expecting it to be the best horror movie ever made. Like, and I know that that's not fair. It's not the movie's fault that it's getting so many compliments. But then
it's a little bit the marketing's fault, though, because the marketing has been pushing that hype of, like, scariest movie, whatever.
If you're trying to get people to the theater, what are you going to do? Be like, you guys, it's not that scary of a movie? Like,
no,
it makes sense,
I mean,
to,
like,
me why. I mean, like, I
critics,
can see why,
like,
people were blown away by this.
I was getting stuff about this movie before I had the chance to see the movie. So by the time I went, I was genuinely, like, I actually set aside the rest of my day so that if I was too freaked out to work, it wouldn't be a problem. Like, that's how anticipating I was that this movie was going to scare the shit out of me. And then I almost fell asleep during it.
Ooh.
Like, yeah. And it's like, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I think that you're right. I think that it builds atmosphere. I think that the style is really impressive. I think that it shows an incredible amount of confidence that he has the characters speak in, like, an old English accent that I'll admit at times I couldn't tell what the hell they were saying.
I don't think anyone can, and I don't think it's that important. Like, as long as you kind of get the gist of what's happening, which you will.
Out of curiosity, when did it drag enough for you to almost fall asleep?
Honest to God, I was just bored the whole way through. I kept waiting for something to really happen, and it just kept being, like, teasing and implying and suggesting. And I thought about this a lot, and this is actually, I was saying to Angie earlier, I purposely didn't review this film because... like, it's just so subjective that me going, this just didn't scare me, I don't think is an interesting comment. But I've been trying to think about why it didn't scare me. And, like, I think it has to do with, like, it's just, there's a kind of horror that doesn't move metal for me. And it's, like, it reminds me of Ben Wheatley's stuff. Like, I remember everybody being excited about The Kill List, and that did nothing for me. I don't know what it is. I was bummed out that, you know, I kept waiting to be super scared. And there were moments where I was, like, interested and, like, being like, oh, this is gonna be, you know, this is gonna be something, but then it was just like something would happen really quick or they would cut away and my interest kept flagging.
Oh, that's funny. I had, like, the exact opposite feel. Like there was nothing that I would say outright scared me in the moment, but the whole concept in general got in my head, and the fact that, like, something of that nature could do that to a family so brutally. And I take a little bit of issue with where it ends. That felt a little cliche to me, but
yeah.
I don't know. In this instance, I think that slow burn effect really served the movie well because it let you get to know the family before it made you like see them get torn apart. And the performances in
like,
this movie
like
are so
you get to know Thomason.
Oh no,
like...
I think you get to know Caleb and like the relationship between all of them and the two twins. And that there's this one scene by the creek or by the lake or by a pond, whatever their water source is in this place, where the older sister is taunting the younger sister about, you know, like I'm a witch, like trying to scare her off. And the conversation that happens between those two young actresses blew my mind. How, like, especially the younger one, who I believe was like 8 or 9 at the time of filming. Like, that scene in particular, I still, like, can't believe how good the performance is from both in that scene.
I mean, I think for me, one of the things that really did work about this movie, I feel like I'm somewhere in between you guys. Like, I didn't wholeheartedly, oh my god, this is the best horror movie since The Babadook, like some people, and I think Perry liked it more than I did, but I also liked it a lot more than Chrissy did. And one of the things that I think it did do really well, actually, is that, I mean, it doesn't show you that much about the backstory of these characters, but just, like, it gives you enough sort of, like, laid-back family interaction between them that you understand their relationships to one another and how they see each other and why their relationships with each other are very complicated. Like, one of the things that I found most compelling about this movie is the way that the dad relates to the rest of his family. So it's basically the dad's fault that this entire family is living in isolation in like the middle of nowhere, because he was, you know, as the head of the family, he was the one that put his foot down, decided to be some kind of religious fanatic, and then got the whole family kicked out of the community. And I guess from the beginning of the movie, I was expecting him to be like very stern, but as the movie goes on, you see like how much he loves his family. You see like the tension between his love for his family and his love for his God. And you see like the kind of like, you know, like his confusion when he doesn't know how to feel about the fact that he starts to suspect that there's something very, very wrong with his kids. I also want to point out, Anya Taylor-Joy is getting a lot of buzz for how good she is in this movie. I thought she was great. But I also really like the kid that plays her, the middle brother. His name is Harvey Scrimshaw, which, by the way, like,
he's
sounds
so
like
good.
Something more from that time than from today. But great name, bro. And he has this one monologue in the middle of the movie that just is like a showstopper. Like, I could not tear my eyes away. I was just like, what the fuck is going on? I thought I think he's fantastic. I can't wait to see what he's going to do next.
We also need to give a little credit to Black Phillip, the goat.
Oh, right, the goat.
I want a Black Phillip toy.
He's stealing a lot of attention. He has his own Twitter account. He's been getting
a lot
of shout-outs.
He does
have
his own Twitter
account.
People
are doing think pieces about Black Phillip. I mean, and to his credit, like, you want to go animal casting, he is fantastic looking. And, like, I really love the animal imagery in this movie.
I heard he put the actor that plays the dad in the hospital multiple times because he just kept hitting him. So Black Phillip was very method, not a nice, cute goat, you guys. He's actually very mean. He's a dick.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I think part of it for me is that, like, from the first moment that they introduce they get to the forest and all of a sudden there's this, like, sound like, wow! Type of thing. That's not what it sounds like. I don't know how to. If they make like a horror sound where it's like, now they're in trouble, they're by this woods. And so, like, you never doubt that there is a witch. And I feel like maybe it might be more compelling to me if that were a thing where we were debating, is there really a witch or is this something the family's, I don't know. I don't even know.
I had the exact opposite reaction. I was debating whether or not the witch was real the entire time. And the reason the score worked for me is because that score was present from the start. It's not like, all right, we're on our happy little colonial plantation and everything is fine, and then all of a sudden they get to the woods and that kicks in. It's something that is there from start to finish, and I think changes subtly enough where it doesn't show that like something scary is gonna happen before it actually happens.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm really bummed.
Movie,
I wanted to like this movie as much as everybody else seems to. Like, I was really looking forward to that, and you know, I mean, you guys have both had this happen where I'm actually bummed out that I don't get to be in that club where I have to be the one being like, eh.
At womp least you've womp. Got Nina forever to champion.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I, like, going back to, though, to the supernatural element, one of the things that I do think worked very well about this movie, I mean, it's a movie called The Witch, so I was like, eventually there's going to be a witch. I wasn't, like, surprised that there was going to be a witch. I wasn't like, I'm so surprised that there's a supernatural element to this movie. But at the same time, I don't think the movie oversells it, and ultimately I think that what is effective about it is that it's not a story of, like, a happy family and then a witch comes along and ruins everything. Like, you start to see the cracks between this family. Like, you start to see the fissures between them. You already start to see them kind of drifting apart, and like the way, like, the even without any of the supernatural stuff, just the harshness of this life that they're living is already starting to rip them apart. And the witch just kind of comes in and fills in the cracks. Like, that's what the supernatural element does. It's not a movie about some outside force tearing apart a happy family. So that was one thing I thought worked really well, because I think the most effective horror movies are the ones that are able to tap into something more real and more relatable than just, I was going about my life and it was a perfectly happy life and then something bad happened. So, you know, I mean, I feel like as much as I do like The Witch, I feel like I maybe admire it more than I like it. But that is one of the things that I thought that was pretty well done.
Clearly, I think I feel both of those things. I admire it and I like it, and I walked out of it needing to see it again. Partially because I didn't understand every single ounce of dialogue that was spoken in this movie, but again, enough information is conveyed clearly enough that you know exactly what's going on and you hear everything you need to hear. But one more thing I want to bring up before we have to wrap is how beautiful this movie looks and how just well shot every freaking frame of this. Like, I could freeze frame and I would want to wallpaper my apartment with it.
Yeah, and there's so much attention to detail, like the costumes are all, like, perfect. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I'm a historian and know if they're, like, perfectly accurate for the period, but they at least look believably consistent and, mm-hmm. like, believably like something that you think would be from the era. Like, you know, you see, like, all the, like, the little hut they live in, it doesn't feel like a movie set. It feels like you actually just walked into someone's, like, weird, muddy little hut in the middle of nowhere in the 17th century. I mean, that was fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's well made.
And just how the movie covers, like...
And I have a suspicion, we're recording this before we know what the numbers are going to be like or what the cinema score is going to be like. I have a suspicion this is not going to do well with audiences.
I don't know.
I think it's not the movie people are expecting. In a way that I feel like undercuts it versus where with Nina Forever, it kind of makes it work.
Well, I've heard quite a few critics, you know, make a point to stress, you know, this isn't a horror movie as in the horror movie you would expect. It's like a horror drama, like heavy emphasis on the word drama, which
I think that gets lost in all the trailers, though.
I'm sure it does. But like if you read, you know, a number of reviews out there, it seems like critics, at least, or people who have seen it, are trying to stress that to a point, which is fair, which is something that people should know before going into it.
Yeah, I think this movie is more creepy than genuinely scary, which is not a criticism, because I find that movies that are creepy kind of linger with me longer and are ultimately more effective to me than movies that just rely on, like, boo, something popped out at you, it's a monster, he looks weird, like, so I like that. But I do think that if you're going in expecting, like, you know, mayhem and bloodshed and, like, you know, giant monsters appearing out of nowhere and tearing people apart, like, it's not that kind of movie. I mean, one very frequent comparison I've seen is The Shining, and while I'm not going to pretend that this movie is as good as The Shining, I will say that it's kind of the same thing, where it's just kind of like a psychological thriller, you know, about like a family that's being torn apart, and then like this like whole supernatural thing is just adds a layer on top of that.
All right, we should probably wrap up. So, any final words on The Witch?
Manage.
We seem to have gone like half and half, kind of.
Yeah, like,
a point for me, half a point for Angie.
Because I think it just depends on what kind of horror you like. But my advice would be, when you hear people saying it's the best horror movie since The Babadook, and a lot of people are saying that, consider what that might mean. Because, like, I went in expecting The Babadook and was like, what the hell is this?
All right.
I would say it's definitely a movie worth watching. I mean, you're like, Christy's right. Like, maybe, not that I think your expectations should be low, but, like, you know, go in with an open mind. Try to ignore all the hype that you've heard. Try to ignore whether you're supposed to be thinking it's the best movie since The Babadook. And try to just let yourself, you know, like, immerse yourself in the experience of being in 17th century New England where you don't know what's going on. So I think that people should watch it, especially if you're a horror fan. It's very well made. It's beautiful to look at. It's very unusual. And it's a story that, I mean, it's like the setting and stuff. It's not something that you see every day. So I think it's definitely worth checking out.
I will agree with all of that, and Black Phillip. And that's a wrap on episode 102 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know the drill. Go to Facebook and like us. Go on Twitter and talk to us at Popcorn Prosecco. We have our iTunes where you can go and subscribe, rate and comment, all that good stuff. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. And then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, do you want to go first?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko. And I write all over the web, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is PNemiroff. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
You're dead.
That doesn't mean we're going to break, though, does it? Body of the